morning, sir, and how are you doing this morning, sir? Can you hear me, sir?
No, we can't, because I don't have this on.
Good morning, sir, can you hear me now?
Yes.
And what is your name, sir? Good morning, sir, and what is your name?
My name is Spencer Watson.
Okay, well, just hold on for one moment. The Honorable Mr. David Neal.
I can't hear you, though.
The Honorable Mr. David Neal, can you hear me now?
Yes.
The Honorable Mr. David Neal will conduct the hearing, and he will get started in just a few moments. So if you can't hear us, just let us know, because sometimes we do have some technical problems with our technology. But we'll try to speak up, and if we don't hear you, we'll let you know. So welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Committee, and the next voice you hear should be that of the Honorable Mr. David Neal. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, and if I fade out or anything you can't hear me, let me know as we go along, like Dr. Mike said, we've been having some technology problems. And I'm technologically handicapped as it is. Okay, so you bring for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency this morning a reference to a parole hearing. I'm going to introduce the board members that will conduct the hearing this morning. To my very far right, Honorable Michael Johnson. To his left is the Honorable Dale Rittenhouse. To our left is the Honorable Dr. Siki, who is our board chairman. And to my left is the Honorable Ray Canonis. My name is David Neal, and I'll be the hearing lead this morning. Okay, so Honorable, with some information, some basics and stuff as we go along. I'll verify it and make sure it sounds like what you know it should be. We get a packet of information and we have to rely on it, but then I always get a full picture of what's going on. So sometimes
you're looking at it. You're cutting in and out.
Part of it says breathing, I think. It says breathing in the phone.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Can you move the microphone for that phone down away from your nose and mouth, down more by your chin?
A microphone?
Yeah, the phone, you know, the phone, the part you're speaking into. Can you move it down away from your nose?
Right.
Okay.
I have it right here.
Okay, now keep it away from your nose and your mouth. You're breathing into it. And when you breathe into it, you can't hear what I'm saying. Okay.
Okay, but your voice when you're speaking is cutting in and out like it's maybe short in the phone or something.
Well, we have those problems too, but if you're breathing into that microphone, then anytime you breathe in there, nobody can hear anything, okay?
Okay, how is this?
Okay, well, yeah, hold it down. You keep going up by your nose. Hold it down by your chin, please. Okay? And we'll try that. Okay?
About now.
Okay, let's try it. All right?
Yeah, all right.
Okay, I'm going to go over some information about your case, and as I go through it, I just want to have you verify that it's the way you understand it to be. We don't always have a full picture. So you're 67 years old now, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you're serving four concurrent life sentences, one's for murder, one's for armed robbery, one's for armed burglary, and one is for burglary. You also have expired one count of burglary, which was for 15 years, and you have one count of auto theft and one count of obstructing justice that you were given time served when you were originally sentenced. So you were originally sentenced to death for the murder sentence. It was on appeal. That was vacated, and you were resentenced to life with parole eligibility after 25 years. Does that sound correct so far, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you were convicted by a jury and sentenced on November 25th, 1974, and at the time of the offense, you were on parole. And actually, had no one on parole with me, but the appeal said that you were kind of went downhill pretty fast when this occurred. Okay, you were certified for this hearing on May 4th, 2018 as for regular home rest or absolute discharge. You've appeared before the board over 25 times with, you know, various outcomes. On December 28, 2007, you were granted home arrest. Then on April 30th, 2009, you were found in violation, but the hearing was continued. And on December 8, 2009, you were granted regular parole. So on, then on December 3rd, 2013, you were found in violation of your parole, but you were continued, and you were violated on January 30th, 2014. For alcohol in the UA, and now one, January 28th, 2014, you were formally revoked. That was on May 27th, 2014. It seems that all of your problems with your parole and home arrest were based on alcohol consumption. Now, does that sound correct to this point in time, sir?
That's what they said it was alcohol consumption, but in 2008, you know, I was out of job at a slaughterhouse, and I was sick, and I was drinking NyQuil. That was the cause of that. And this was verified by my parole officer and the company that I worked for.
Okay, well, sir, I think that was one of the ones where you were 2008. That's way back in the beginning. That was part of your home arrest, but you were granted very cruel by the time it was all over. It was a few months, but it went back and forth. But just for the record, for the information that I have been given by people that are chemists, but they work in the labs that test for this stuff, you would have to drink so much NyQuil to get a good positive alcohol reading that you'd be a lot sicker from the NyQuil than you were from the illness you took it for. But that's neither here nor there, because back at that time you were put on regular parole, but then there was not a violation, all the warrants and everything for all the revocations and violations and everything were all based on alcohol consumption of some sort. The basics of the offense were that you and a co-defendant went out with several residents. You were armed and you robbed the homeowners and took property. But on one of the instances, you ended up shooting the male occupant four times and that killed him. And that's where the warrant of this offense is. But however, because you're on parole, everything was aggravated, and you have several instances of these armed burglaries and armed robberies. So, but you've been in and out, and I guess it was on May 27, 2014, so about 4 years ago. The last time you were revoked, and it was because you had alcohol in the UA on January 28th, 2014. So let's see, we've got minimal programming, but you also have minimal discipline, and we have none since 2003. Of course, when you were out, there's a minimum record of discipline. There's really no letters of support, and also would be noted that I don't have any letters of opposition that are current. Your release plan doesn't sound too bad, but there's no verification from your pastor that he would actually house you and help you.
I can't hear you.
Okay, I said there's no... Your release plan doesn't sound too bad, but there are no verification letters and nobody in the gallery to verify that they would be housing you or helping you with your finances.
My pastor is supposed to be there in a few so they call him chairman, and they didn't know that he would be there and to verify that he was reading now.
Sir, I don't have anything indicating the phone call, and there's nobody in the doubt. So that's all I have to go on, and there's no letters of verification.
And the possibility that you can call him, because the number is there, he may be on the way.
Where would the number be? Oh, it's on there, okay.
It's right there. It's right there on the information that I sent to Dr. Central White.
Okay, so it's on your progress report. You have a phone number listed for your pastor, so you put a phone call in and she can get hold of him.
Okay, we'll try.
Pastor for Mr. Watson.
Yes, I am.
Yes, this is Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and we are in the process of conducting this hearing at this time, and he said that he had expected that you were going to be in attendance, and so then he asked if we would give you a call, so that's why we're making this call at this time, sir. So,
okay.
So we're going to continue the hearing. We just started the hearing, and the Honorable, one of our board members, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, is conducting a hearing at this time. Therefore, he will continue to conduct the hearing, and he will call on you at the appropriate time, sir.
Okay, I'll be listening.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so the passage, for a quick run-up, we were discussing his release plan and where he would be staying and his financial situation. And in fact, nobody was here, we didn't have any letters. So we called you, and in a few minutes I'll let you in. If you want to speak on his behalf, you can do that too. We'll verify all this stuff, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, thank you. Okay, Mr. Watson, so we have your pastor on the phone, so we'll be verifying that in a few minutes. So that's a little bit better. So I don't see in your discipline history any alcohol problems, but there's some of those that could be, it wouldn't necessarily be noted that way. Way back when this offense occurred, were you doing drugs or drinking a lot or both, or what was going on with that?
No, sir. I wasn't drinking and I wasn't on drugs. You know, I was in a place where I should never have been. I was a young kid. This was like 44, 45 years ago, and I was someplace where I never should have been. You know, and unfortunately, a situation developed to where it was more or less like a shootout. And I'm sorry that I did it. It wasn't something that was planned. It wasn't something that was attempted. You know, I was a kid during the time, you know, and I didn't, you know, I was reckless. You know, I admit that. I'm responsible for taking a human life. And I regret that. I live with that every day. It's not something that happens in your life. It's something that you just sweep under the carpet or you forget. You know, I mean, it's an everyday situation. Mr. Albert Garman had did nothing to me, you know, and I shouldn't have been where I was, and unfortunately, the situation ended as it did. Now, I did 35 years. I served 35 years for that. The program saw fit to release me in 2008. I got out, I got a job, I became a citizen once again, and I'm very proud of that. I'm still very proud of it. You know, I got a job, I went to work every day, I paid taxes, and I worked in a slaughterhouse. I was working maintenance, you know. I to meet downstairs where they wish to meet. And it's extremely cold downstairs, extremely hot upstairs. That's how I wind up with the flu. And I had a severe case of the flu. And because I didn't know no better, you know, I bought my 5 bottles of NyQuil, and I'm drinking NyQuil thinking that I was going to, you know, that I would be all right. That's how that incident happened about me having a shooting board before I was reinstated. But I took the NyQuil because of television commercial. I didn't know no better. All of my life it was instant. You know, 35 years I stayed in prison. And I didn't know nothing about medications. You know, so I figured the more NyQuil I drink, the sooner I would get well. My parole officer knew about it, and the foreman at my job knew. That's how that incident happened. But then I left Phoenix, moved to Tucson to take care of my mother. She lived by herself. You know, she's 96 years old at the time. So I'm taking care of her, I'm taking care of all the expenses, I'm taking care of all the household, you know, I'm paying all of the bills, making sure she made her doctor's appointment, you know, and
I want to interrupt you at this point. You're talking, you're in 08, so we've still got a warrant that was done February 18th of 2009. And the allegations on it were acting, driving while intoxicated. And
yes.
And the BAC that you had was a 0.08 on February
4th. Yes.
Okay, that is,
you can't
drink and live through enough NyQuil to get a 0.08. So let's move on beyond that one, okay? And let's go to the next time that, when they reinstated, they just went out and then got to violate it again. Okay? You were given the brother's role, and then on and in 2013, you were found in violation again, and it was because of alcohol in any way. You violated on January
20th. I went to traffic court. I was driving my cousin to work in his car. I was pulled over by the police, pulled me over, and couldn't find out the insurance had expired on my cousin's car. The tags were expired. I had no knowledge of this. And on the way, the police pulled me over and he gave me the ticket. He told me that he knew it wasn't my car, but since I was driving, I had a license. My cousin didn't have a valid license. And so I'm taking him to work, and the police officer told me that he had to give me the issue the tickets to me because I was driving. He told me to go down to traffic court, and they would drop the tickets for $1,000 each. And he told me to go down to traffic court, they would reduce the sum. I went down there, and they reduced the sum from $2,000 to $1,647, you know. And after I left the traffic court, I stopped by the store and bought a 12-ounce can of beer, took 2 sips out of it. My parole officer called me. I went down to the parole office, and he got me a warrant to a breathalyzer, and it registered 0.03. And I told him what had happened, you know, and why I did it. You know, because I'm sitting there, I went to court and I got a paper for a motion to make an appointment with a judge so that I could explain the situation. You know, and I didn't deny taking a couple of sips out of a can of beer. But I took 2 sips out of it and went straight down. I never missed an appointment at Taft. I never missed an appointment with my parole officer. I was always up front with him. I never hid anything, never lied to him.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Well, the lawyer was talking about the BAC of 0.08 and the driving.
That was from the NyQuil.
No, sir, I'm sorry, I can't buy into that, but the point away from my story, virtually, well, it may not be impossible, but if you have, I don't think you have enough money to buy enough microphones to give you a point away. So anyway, let's move on from that, let's move on from that, okay? So, okay, whatever, however, whenever, in May of 2014, was last time we revoked, and you've been in jail ever since, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you've been in front of the board a few times since then, and you're always denied. So, why don't you tell us, the board, what has happened?
Excuse me, I'm hearing you right now. Would you repeat that, please?
Pardon?
Would you repeat what you just said? You cut out just then, and I didn't hear what you said.
All right, I think the service is positioning on the microphone. Okay, May of 2014, you were revoked in the why don't you tell the board what has gone on with you since you were revoked the last time, programming, changes in your thought processes, whatever's gone on since 2014, the last 4 years, that would convince us that maybe we should give you another chance.
Well, since 2014, I've been here, you know, for the last 4.5 years. I attend NA in LA. You know, I've had a prison job where, you know, I walk around with a bucket and cut paper and cigarette butts and stuff like that. You know, I work on what they call the ground cleaners crew. You know, and I've had that job. I've had a job as a porter inside the buildings. You know, I had any kind of job ever since I've been here. I'm doing something, and I attend AA, and I attend NA. I should have received a few more certificates from Tucson Cimarron Complex, but they moved me here to Douglas, and I never got the certificates that I went to attended those classes for. You know, but I still attend AA, and I intend to continue attending AA. My pastor used to take me to my AA classes when I walk every Saturday, and I never miss one. In the AA class is at the parole office, so I sign in, you know, every Saturday. I never missed a Saturday up until the time this happened. I do everything, you know, in my opinion, right. And I was drinking those juice with my mother, but, you know, I'll call myself doing the best I can where she's concerned. I put her through a lot. She suffered a lot. But last June, she passed. She was 100 years old, 1 month, and 9 days, you know. And she was the most important person in my life. All I did when I was away from home, I was at Bible study, Sunday services, or choir practice, you know. When I was away from home, I was in church. If I wasn't in church, I was at home. I wasn't going to clubs. I wasn't chasing women. I wasn't doing any of that. I was being a responsible human being, you know, and I was proud of the life I was building for myself. Because I spent 35 years in this place, and I never really had a life. And all the years that I have left, I want to build a life. And I spent 6 years building that life, and I was doing a pretty good job. You know, and my desire is to continue building my life and go to my mother's graveside and sit down and talk to her and apologize to her for not being there. And I feel like I wasn't there when she needed me most. But she has always been there for me. I don't roam the street. I don't do any of those things that would allow me to have an encounter with a police officer or anything. I don't do anything to break the law. I do everything that I think. I just joined the church. The pastor is on the phone. I joined his church. He baptized me. He can vouch for everything that I'm saying.
Okay,
you know?
Sir?
Yes?
Okay, what
it seems that everything that you've gone over, other than your brother's passing, and our board's condolences for that, but it seems that everything that you've just gone over about how you change or anything else is even so to that we should consider some type of release for you. Well, before you got revoked last time, what have you done the last 4 years? You've been incarcerated, so yeah, you're not going to be doing anything out there running around to get police contact out of life because you're in jail. What have you been doing for the last 4 years that would make you a good candidate for parole?
Well, I've been attending AA, and they don't have the only program they have here for me is AA and NA. They have no other educational programs. There's nothing here that I can take, and I can bring a counselor in here and even verify it. They offer nothing for me other than AA and NA. A means of menial job. That's it. So I take advantage of what's offered to me. And at this point, that's all I need to do. Now, out there in the street, I didn't do more. I was on Social Security. That was how I was paying the bills at my mother's house and supporting myself. You know, and I intend to do Social Security with my disability, reinstated, and do our jobs on the side to subsidize, you know, my Social Security income. You know, I'm doing the best with what I have to work with here.
Okay, so how have you changed in the last 4 years? What have you done? What's different about you in the last 4 years?
Well, what's different about me is focusing in on my spiritual growth. You know, I've been doing that over the years, and I figured the more I know God, the better I know myself. You know, and I put God first and foremost in my life, you know, and what I do is for the church, for God, and for myself, you know, trying to be the best human being that I could be. You know, I am the best human being that I could be. I don't run with gangs. I've never had any gang affiliation. You know, I mean, there's plenty of reasons in a place like this to find some kind of something to protect yourself with. But I refuse. Out of all the years I spent here, I've never had a weapon. I've never been in any altercations. I don't run with a group. I don't run with a crowd. I do not hang out. You know, I read and I study. Right now I'm reading Journey of the Soul. You know, and Winds and Wither. You know, where I come from and where I'm going to end up eventually.
Okay, sir.
And I'm doing that. Yes?
Okay, you said your Social Security and disability, is that money sufficient for you to survive or anything now? Are you going to have to work to supplement it?
Well, I'm going to use that to buy my food, you know, and pay, since I'll be reunited with my pastor, I can pay a couple of his bills, buy my food, you know, I already have clothes, you know, and then I do sideline work, you know. I go around and salvage, pick up aluminum cans, plastic bottles, and take it to the salvage yard and sell it. And that, you know, I mean, I don't need much.
Okay.
You know, it's just me.
All right. Well, the Department of Corrections requires that you have some way of either in your bank account or somebody that will take responsibility and make sure that you've got enough to survive on for the first couple of months, because, you know, like all your Social Security stuff, you have to go back and get it reinstated and take some time and everything. We'll get in there. So that's what I'm assuming. So, but we always like to put that out there, because sometimes people say, yeah, they can come live with me, but don't realize that, you know, the inmate has to be able to show their living expenses are going to be available and everything. So we always get that out there so that everybody knows. And we have a couple of minutes left around here, actually. Okay, sir?
I do work with my pastor, too. We do sideline, you know, our job. I work with him. He kind of do side
Okay. So I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time. Mr. Johnson?
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm just going back to your college, and I've been through it before, and I'm just trying to understand, I know Mr. Neal talked earlier, and he said that all the ramifications had something to do with alcohol. And yet, what you're saying is that this last ramification that you would have been drinking NyQuil, and I'm looking through the report, and what I see is that they continued your hearing to have a people from task coming in, and they did, and they continued to give because they were not satisfied with the answer. Then they subsequently, after having all of those tests done, they subsequently violated you for consuming alcohol. But prior to that, you changed and said that you had got a party that was lemon, tea, and honey, and it had brandy in it, and that's why you had the alcohol in your breath. And I'm telling you, you said, listen to me. Here's what I'm having a problem, is that you have a drinking problem, and this board, and we have to make a decision that it would be in the best interest that you would be offended, and that it's in the best interest of the public. But you have been out drinking and driving, and you're still not admitting to drinking and driving. And I'm not sure that if you release even if you say it's your pastor, that you might continue to drink. And my concern is that you're drinking and driving and damaging the lives of other people. And you have been insistent that the NyQuil is what caused you to go to 0.08. But this board prior to these terms that on the board went beyond looking at what you're doing by going to and having the math and task coming testify twice to verify whether it was a NyQuil. And I'm sure you're aware that they testified that it wasn't a NyQuil that caused you to go to 0.08. And you're still insisting that this is my corner, and there are other two times that the other time that you were out in the bar of alcohol. So that's a great concern. So I would like to know, and who's the lead? I'm just one board member. I would like to know, sir, how when you release that down upon the rest, that you are not being bothered and drinking alcohol and not coming up with excuses for having alcohol content in the system.
Well, I'll be right with my pastor, and my pastor is a straight man, and if he thinks for one second that I would have been drinking, he would turn me in. And another thing, sir, the NyQuil issue was the issue back in 2009. The other issue, you're confusing two issues. 2009 was the NyQuil issue when I was on my way to work and I blew 0.08. The TAB situation about this new test that they gave me, which was a clinical test, that is 2014. It's two different issues you keep speaking of. And that's where TAS was involved in 2014, not 2009. TAS was involved in my situation 19.
Okay, so what happened in the 2014 incident, sir?
That was a situation where my mother was like 96 years old, and she had a problem with arthritis, and I'm trying to figure out a way to help relieve her pain. So what I did was I went up to a doctor, and I tried to get her dosage of medication increased. The doctor told me because she's 96 years old at the time that was an impossible situation. So what I did, a friend of mine told me, say, try giving her no duels. It's and that's what I was drinking, and I admit to that. I went to my parole officer, and I told him about it, and I told him why I was doing it. I thought it was a violation. I was doing it from not only from a distant purpose for my mother, but to try to relieve her pain. She was drinking on pills and laying out in the seat. You know, I just thought, I was trying to help. I wasn't trying to do harm. You know, I was trying to do harm to myself and anybody else. And that's the honest God's truth. And I'm sure my pastor can verify that, because he used to come by and spend a lot of time at my house, at my mother's house. And I used to go, when I go to church, I ride with him. We go to Sunday school, say the Sunday service on Wednesday nights. We were at choir rehearsal. When that wasn't happening, I was at home with my mother. Looking after her, she was 96, and she failed once before. You know, and I'm just happy that the time that she did fall, I wasn't in church, I was at home. So I picked her up and said, you know, lay on the couch. You know, I did everything within my power, you know. And then he mentioned something about the 2009. Yes, I did drink a hot toddy, but that was for medicinal purposes. It was the same time I was drinking NyQuil. You know, my parole officer verified at the time was to the lease, and the foreman that was at the company that I worked for. I worked for Smithfield Meatpacking Company, a slaughterhouse, in Tucson, Arizona. When they catch me out partying and drinking and driving, I was under the influence. I drink a hot toddy, and then I had been drinking NyQuil too. And all of that was verified back then. So I never denied anything, and I never lied to anybody about it. I've been honest all the time. You know, I spent 35 years in this place before I was released. And my whole life changed. You know, I mean, there's plenty of reasons for somebody to arm themselves, but I never did. Because there's always something crazy going on behind you. Something happened. But I never armed myself. I never joined any gangs. You know, I have no gang affiliations. I don't do any of them things. But I do study.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Mr. Canoe.
Thank you, one second, let me make sure this. Mr. Watson?
Yes, sir.
I just have a few questions, and I know we're asking a lot of questions this morning, and I want to begin by saying that your case is kind of difficult. You committed a crime a long time ago, I get that. That was, in my opinion, because we're not a court, worthy of a life sentence. But you had 25 years to life, you were in the prison system for a long time. You have a good history when it comes to discipline. I noticed that you haven't had any discipline since 2003, at least that's what's in Ames. The board gave you a chance for freedom. It was kind of a winding road there. I mean, but it was for a few years. It was for several years. Now, you broke trust when you used alcohol. And you were, after going through this whole laboratory process, people testifying, you were revoked. You've been back in this prison system. You have had very little discipline. I'll give you full credit for that. You're to be commended for that. The problem I'm having is that it seems that you're being very evasive about the alcohol story. I think it'd be easier for me as an individual voting member to consider your case if I felt that there was ownership. But I'm not really hearing it. I keep hearing the NyQuil story. And I got to tell you right now, and we may agree to disagree. me, but I just don't feel like we're getting the whole story. I'm not feeling it. I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, the word is, and that which I did tell the people that were at one of my years, I don't remember which one it was, how long ago, but I had a brother, Ronnie Rossett, you know, he had cancer, and he was dying. He took out two shot glasses of this stuff that he drank, and he told me, I knew something was wrong with him, because he was like 6'3", weighed like 250 pounds, and all of a sudden, he shrieked, and he's down to like maybe 150. And he sent me down, and he told me, he said, look, bro, he said, we ain't got to spend no time together. We really don't even know each other. We brothers, but we don't know each other. He said, this is the last thing we probably gonna get to do together. He filled up a shot glass or whatever it is that he was drinking, and he filled up one for himself and one for me. And he told me that he was dying. We drink that, sip that little drink, and I told him he was on the board about it. You know, I didn't have to, but I told him about it because I was being honest. You know, I haven't been consuming alcohol. That's not to say that since I've been out there, I hadn't taken a drink. And I told my parole officer that I had took a drink. I took a drink from my mother's 96th birthday. Yes, 96th birthday. And I told my parole officer, I asked him if it was all right to, you know, to kind of like congratulate her 96 years. But I've been deceived. I'm not trying to deceive members of the board. You know, I have...
Well, sir, Mr. Watson,
everybody out.
I'm not going to drag this out, but I'll give you an example here, why it's uncomfortable for me as a voting member. You said your brother poured you a shot of something. I don't even know why you can't say what it was. What was it? What did he pour you a shot of?
Well, let me think a second. It's some kind of whiskey or velvet, black velvet.
Okay, sir.
He threw me a shot of black velvet, and he died. He died at 22 feet. He died of cancer. And I wrote the board, and I told the board about it.
Okay, I have no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Watson. Okay, so I'm just trying to understand what you're saying, and there's a letter that's in here that you say you told the board, but there's a letter in here dated February 26th of 2014 that you wrote, and you wrote it to the board, and nowhere in this letter does it say anything with your brother who was dying that you took a shot with your brother. It does state in here that
that was a hearing.
Okay.
It was a hearing.
But what I'm saying is that you wrote this letter. If that's true, why did you put it in the letter, sir?
When you sit down to, I guess when I sit down to write it, you know, I didn't remember everything. Like, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but I guess it was just something that slipped my mind. But I told the members of the board.
But
I
was
incident.
But in this letter, sir. In this letter.
This was in 2015 when my brother died.
All right, thanks, sir.
Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal. Okay, Mr. Watson.
Yes.
Why don't you, and maybe you are in your opinion, why don't you come clear with this board? Because you keep you keep changing. You keep changing. You say one thing, then you say something else. It's your brother, it's your mother, it's you, it's this, it's that, the other, it's the pastor. How can't you just give us an answer,
a direct answer to this board and stop changing, sir. I think the board will have more confidence in you. We cannot have confidence in you and you continue to change, sir. One time it's the Nightingale, the next time it's Black Velvet, the next time it's something else and something else. So what are you really telling this board? What is the truth, sir? That's all that we're asking. What is the truth, sir?
The truth is, sir, that it's been, like you said, it's been three different occasions, and I'm speaking about three different occasions. And each one is not the same. You know, I was sick. The verification should be in my file. You should have a verification for my parole officer and the foreman at the job I had. I had a severe case of it, too. You know, in that situation about the shout-out to my brother, I told it to the members of the board. You know, when I appeared at
sir, I do not disagree with you that you had the flu. That's not in question. I don't question that you had the flu, sir. I do question the fact that you had five bottles of NyQuil that you was drinking. I don't deny the fact that you had the flu. I have the flu. Other people have the flu. But I'm not going to take no five bottles of NyQuil and drink. And my brother is on his way. And I accept our condolences for your brother. But he's in the process of dying of cancer. And someone's going to sit down and have a drink with him. And my mother is 96 years of age. And I'm just going to drink something to celebrate her 96th birthday. I'm saying that it's maybe it's logical to you, sir, and I don't deny maybe it's logical to you, but it's not to me, and I can't speak for other board members, but I don't think it's logical to other board members as well, sir. And I'm just trying to ask you to tell us something logical that we can accept, and so far you just have not done that, sir.
Well, Mr. Wright, my intentions are good. My intentions are to continue going to AA. I've taken some drinks. I've admitted to that. I take responsibility for that. And I do regret it. I'm sorry that I run into the situations that I run into. It wasn't my intent for this to happen, you know. And with the excitement of after 35 years of being free, and trying to do the best that I thought I was doing the best that I could. You know, and if I took a drink from time to time, it wasn't out in the street, it wasn't, you know, just because I wanted to be religiously. You know, and that would be something I'm going to do for however long I live. You know, I'm not going to stop. You know, but I'm continually working on trying to make me a better me. You know, I want to be the best human being that I can possibly be. I'm making mistakes in my life, but that part of my life is honestly over. And I give you my word, each and every member on this board, that I'll never take a drink again. Because the consequences is too severe. It's not worth it.
Okay.
That's my word as a human being.
Okay. Thank you so very much, Mr. Watson. And thank you so very much, Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Any other questions from the board?
Okay, sir. There's no other questions from the board, so I am going to let your pastor speak to us now. Okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If
you can, I need to tell you this story about Spencer, the brother's close. This regular lady was there, and she suspected that she had left when she was smoking, whatever. And, we got pregnant. And she knew that I heard that, and it hurt her, and she said, "I'm not as bad as he says I am." And I said, "He didn't say he was bad. He said he didn't like what you were doing." And so I took him off, and long story short, I took him off in the corner because I didn't want other people to hear. And I prayed for him, both of them, and she didn't come, but he came. And so it took us a week, and we just kept coming until I ended up back five of him. And Spencer and I had become not just a member, but he was a friend. And because of our friendship and what I feel is in him, I told him I was willing to let him come and live with me. When I made the rules out, I told him, if it's okay, I'm going to say it the way I said to him. I said, "I'm going to be on your ass." I said, because those people put you up in there for your drinking. I said, "You will never drink again." I don't drink, but I have been pastor for 14 years. I've been preaching for 28 years. And I'm willing to take a chance on Spencer because of what I see in him. And I just pray to God that you guys will do the same. And I don't care what you have to do to put on me, to hold me even responsible. I just know that this is real and it's going to work. I feel he needs that chance, and I will also, I'll be 71 years old in July 10th. I worked on my life. I laid block, carpet, tile, and I still do some of it. I've got two other guys that have working with me, and not only working with me, and I do some with me because I don't have people working for me. I'm teaching them the truth. So I've got them to learn, and confident in Spencer because he was not made to come to church Bible study for his own, just that he wanted to. So that's basically what I have to say. If I had to be, and I wouldn't do it to everybody because I ain't no fool. But the Spencer Watson, we can live in my house. I'm not rich, but I don't mind sharing. So everybody will be taken care of. My wife knows it. I have a 21-year-old son who's there. And who knows Bob? This is really by me a stupid. So we will be taken care of and pushed to do the wrong thing.
Okay, thank you, sir. The one thing that, I mean, I appreciate the fact that you're talking about being on his, you know what, and after him, slowing the world down to he has to decide that's what he wants to do. And that's where the world's having difficulty at this point in time, because with his history of parole, in and out, and alcohol, he, every time he gets in trouble, then he decides he's not going to do it anymore, and that's what he promises, and it seems now, soon after, he hollers out, he starts doing what he did. So,
yeah,
but,
okay. I understand that, and all I was trying to do is from my standpoint, from my end, what I can do, I mean, you guys have to do your job. He was stay here, he's coming to one of the soldiers, stuff will come to the higher power, so they're easy to follow, but he has really, that's your job. But on my end, spiritually, this is where I want to help. All things work together for the good of them that love the Lord that are called according to his purpose. So I just want to do my part, and I think it takes us all to help people that live here, and I know that that's what God is calling us all to do, because his job, Jesus, is that the Son of Man comes to seek and save that which is lost. So we have to seek and save those that are lost. And he needs to just God. So I'm just trying to do it that way, and not taking anything away from what your job is. You know, I don't begrudge you for doing your job, but I have to be mine.
Okay, well, yeah, and the board appreciates that. We really do. It's very beneficial for anybody in life, really, to have a mentor or somebody that is going to kind of not only watch over them and help them learn, but to kind of watch over them and make sure they don't go the wrong direction. But, you know, no matter how strong the mentor is, it still goes back on the person. But we appreciate it, and I'm sure you can do a pretty good job of keeping people in line. I have a son that's becoming a minister, and he's a little bit on the hard love side, you know. He probably will do the same things you're doing. So we appreciate it, and we thank you. And now I'm going to go back to Mr. Watson.
And we're good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Watson.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
May I say something?
Well, hang on there, sir. That's what we're getting ready for. We're nearing the end of your hearing at this time. And before the board goes into discussion to make a determination, we'd like to allow you an opportunity to make a final statement. We ask that you don't repeat the information you've already given us, but if there's something else you'd like to tell us before we go into the discussion, now is the time, okay?
Yes, sir. Mr. Neal, is your name? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Mr. Neal, it seems that I don't know, I guess I'm having a problem kind of explaining myself, but if the members of the board want me to confess to having a problem with alcohol, I'll confess that, and I'll check myself into a rehab if that's what I need. And I'll ever find out, I'll check myself into a rehab and deal with this problem and be done with it. For everybody's satisfaction, because I don't want to be a problem. I've spent so much time in this place, you know, I haven't had a life. And I like to experience what it is just to live in peace. And I promise each and every member of this board that I'll never have another problem such as this. Check myself into a rehab. Whatever I need to do, I'm willing to do that. But I'm not going to deny to you. I need help. I need the experience of whatever medical society can do for me. I need to be under their care. And if that's what I need to do, that's what I'll do that. And I won't miss an appointment. I won't miss anything. And my pastor, he's going to shoot to it. You know, he's not only a pastor, he's a strict disciplinarian. You know, and I respect him. And I love him for that. And his wife. And the members of the church, because that's my family. Those are my friends. And we all want the best for each other, and I know they want the best for me. And you have my promise. I check in with my parole officer whenever I need to check in with him. I've never been late for any kind of appointment, any with parole, task, or anything else. I've always been where I was supposed to be. And I will seek the help with the assistance of my parole officer and my pastor. And I won't miss an appointment. And you may have my word for that. That's my promise.
Thank you, sir. Before we'll be going into discussion to make a determination, we'll be talking amongst ourselves. You may think we're addressing you, but we won't be. We'll be discussing your case. But we'll ask you to stay on the phone, just remain silent, and I'll get back with you after we've made a decision, okay?
Okay.
The board is now in discussion. Well, this is it's interesting to say the least. Mr. Watson has spent quite a bit of time in DLC, that he's been out and back and out and back. Same type of problem each time, which is boiled down to alcohol. The idea that NyQuil would cause a 0.08 breathalyzer is just really beyond my training, and it is too high above my pay grade for me to understand, but I've had considerable amount of DUI training, and NyQuil is not one of the issues for intoxication normally, but it can be if you drink enough. But it seems that Mr. Watson changes, he doesn't take ownership of it even until after he's been tested on. When he's talking, he's got 40 excuses for no reasons. He doesn't really take ownership until you call him on it and question him about it. And when he does, but he had 4 or 5 different reasons for 2 different DAs and 1 UA. And I'm just not convinced that Mr. Watson has developed much since he was revoked last time. Other than when he told him some AA and NA traffic, the certificate that I saw is from 2015, which would be right after he went back then. At this time, I'm just not comfortable with the idea of any type of release or absolute discharge for Mr. Watson. But I'm going to listen to a discussion from him and my fellow board members. Ms. Rittenhouse?
Thank you, Mr. Neal. My concern is just Mr. Watson's attitude about taking a shot of whiskey with his brother or celebrating the 96th birthday. When someone has an alcohol problem, they can't drink any alcohol. And if he goes to AA and he's truly an AA member, he knows that. So I think, based on his attitude, that he will drink again. And he will drive again, and he will endanger the public. So that my vote would be no.
Thank you.
I do think that the master is really sincere and willing to reach out and give him the hug, and I actually commend the pastor for taking that effort and that step. But and I think the pastor would be very strict. But I just have a problem. I've gone through 2 letters that that he wrote, that Mr. Watson has wrote, and then either those 2 letters, at no time did he say he had 2 shots with his brother who was dying. He doesn't say anything about that. And each time he just comes out, and then he just, in his last statement, said that if the board wanted him to say that he had an alcohol problem, and it's not that the board wants him to do it, we would want to feel as though he's been honest, but I am, like my colleague, Ms. Rittenhouse, you know, I just feel as though he's told too many stories, and at no point has he told the real story as to why or when he was drinking. He's, when he was stopped, he said that in one of the letters that he had been drinking on dudes, which the dudes wouldn't give him that. Then he says that he had a lemon and honey, and he didn't taste the alcohol that was in there, but there would have had to been a lot of alcohol in that home remedy. And I know, you know, we kind of go through a thing where that you go through that they make it a home remedy, and it's not that much alcohol that's actually put in there. And then the other thing is that this last story, he says he's told the board, but he didn't tell the board, but I can say that in these 2 letters that he has written, he has not said anything in these 2 letters. with his brother just seems to keep coming up with excuses, and I know we talked to it extremely, and I know that we've had this opportunity to talk with him, and we have this same thing. I'm just not convinced that he would not drink when he's out, and that he does have an alcohol problem, and that he would drive, and he would endanger the lives of the public once he's released himself. He deals and understands that he has a problem, and he starts to show some sign that he's dealing with that problem instead of making the excuses.
Thanks, sir. Mr. Kamal.
Thank you. I think I just have a variation of what my colleagues have already offered. It's unfortunate that in my opinion, based on Mr. Watson's evasive responses regarding past alcohol use, there's substantial reason to believe that he will not adhere to the conditions of supervised release at this stage of his personal development. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Neal. I agree with my distinguished colleagues, and I do want to just express my appreciation to Pastor for being willing to put this trust in Mr. Watson. However, I do think that it's the board has the responsibility, and despite everything else, just from a practical standpoint, and if I'm in error, then I apologize for that. He admitted himself that he had that drink, although it was just 2 sips. He had just come from the judge's chambers, whatever. He started drinking beer. You know, that just does not make too much sense to me, and maybe I'm too old-fashionedly. I said all that just to say at this point in time, I'm not in favor of releasing Mr. Austin back out into the public. Thank you so very much, Mr. Neal, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Ryan. Before I make the motion, I would also like to commend the pastor for his desire to help Mr. Watson and his willingness to open his home up for him. There's not enough people out there who are that caring and willing to do that. But I also have to agree about that. And I just am not convinced that Mr. Watson wrote reserves not values during time of God and the name of the public. So at this point, I would like to make a motion to deny the unrest or ask you to discharge at this time. And there's a view of greater offense that we've set off. And that would be the motion. We'll get reason back for we finish the motion.
Second. Agreed.
Motion by myself, seconded by Mr. Johnson. Agreed by Dr. Wright, Richard Morris, and Greenhouse. Okay, Mr. Watson, the board has voted to deny you parole, home arrest after discharge at this time. We do wish you luck, but we suggest that you try to make a plan, get a release plan, and get some things straight down in your mind, and you can probably reseal 3 about what might be as far as programs for alcohol abuse. But in about 6 months, the DOC will recertify you for another hearing, and unless you want to raise the hearing, we will see you again in about 6 months. Okay? Okay.
Do you have any, what would you recommend?
We don't recommend. When you go through the hearing, and it is up to you to, based on what happened in the hearing, it's up to you to figure out what you need to do to maybe get yourself a little closer to. So that, to be able to get the board's trust, okay?
My problem is this.
Okay,
sir.
Okay, sir.
Yes.
I'm going to read the reasons for this denial, and that will end your hearing and one does it out, okay? No more discussion now. Okay, so the reasons that we deny a serious and violent offense, loss of human life, it was a serious and devious offense, trauma to the victim, serious bodily injury, and there were multiple victims, violated previous probation and parole, and they had a history of continued substance abuse, which would be the alcohol, and keep repeating that, that the prior criminal history, which was while we were on probation, a repeat offender, or a history of assaulting behavior, we needed closer supervision, and lack of programming. And it was, although you have the pastor, there was more of a family or community support. So that will end your hearing, sir. Would you put the CO3 back on the phone, please?
Thank you.